I'm Zach.
And I'm Josh.
And this is Lamp Stomp, a Pixar podcast.
Josh, we are back.
We're back.
Back and better than ever. And today we're going to be talking about Soul.
This is a fun movie, man.
It is. I was telling you that this is the second time that I've watched this movie. I've only watched Soul and Luca once. So until last night, I watched Soul again, so I'm excited to watch those movies as a rewatch for the first time. But before we get into talking about Soul, I have something that I want to mention because it is incredibly, incredibly true. The opening credits are hilarious, for one, when it comes down on the Disney castle and usually like... And it's like all majestic and awesome, but this opening, when it opens to the band class trying to play the music, is legitimately one of the funniest bits that maybe Pixar has ever done, because it is just so funny and so true. I now work in a middle school, and so I am right down the hall from the band class, and and you can hear them pretty much at all times. And for the most part, it's fine. But what's funny is the eighth graders are great. Like, they've been practicing for a few years. They're fantastic. The seventh graders, still pretty good, but you can see the decline. And then sixth graders, we'll just leave it at that. So
that was Joe's comments are super accurate.
Pretty good representation of maybe an early year band class is kind of what I'll say.
That's so funny. I will talk about this more, but I like actually busted out laughing at that spot, and I was like, okay, this movie's gonna be a good time.
Sure. All right, with all that said, why don't we go ahead and jump into our Remember Me section?
Zach, Soul opens up, like you said, with the Disney, it starts before the movie starts with the Disney castle and the band music playing, and it is not good. And it's hard to listen to. And Joe Gardner is the music class teacher. He seems like he's actually like kind of like a sub or an interim teacher, but at the beginning he'll get offered a full-time position. He is in this class and he's talking about, they're all playing this song, and one of his students gets super into the song, and she has this moment where she's like, stands up, she's super in the music, doesn't even really realize what's going on around her, and everybody starts laughing, and he's like, no, it's good. And he starts playing the piano and talks about the story of when he fell in love with jazz, when he watched this one jazz pianist play and get into the zone, this place where everything else melts away and it's just you and the music. And when he steps out of the class, he has one of his supervisors, maybe the principal or vice principal, is offering him a full-time position, but he hates the idea because he's teaching, but it's just kind of to pay bills. He wants to be a jazz musician. He wants to make a living gigging and playing jazz music. So he goes to his mom and family, and he's talking about how he got offered this position. They're all super excited because they're wanting him to be able to have a safety net, a safe, secure career, and full-time gigging doesn't really pay the bills, much less cover any other stuff that you might need. But when he goes home after that, he is thinking, I guess I have to take this job. But then he gets a call from an old student telling him that he has a chance to play with a famous jazz musician, Dorothea Williams. So he goes in, he auditions, and I wouldn't say necessarily that he nailed it, but he was good. And he got carried away and got in the zone. It was playing and got mixed up, but he gets offered the job. He gets a chance to play one show to see how he does in the actual show. So he is thrilled. He's like, I got the job. I'm so excited. I got the gig of my lifetime. This is everything I've been waiting for my entire life. And he is very focused on nothing at all. And he's wandering through the streets of New York, nearly killing himself about 5 or 6 different times before he finally falls in a manhole and dies. Well, at least that's what we figure out how it happened. He falls in a manhole, and then it shows up with the glowing blue soul, the characters that we are introduced to. And he is on this, kind of looks like a piano, honestly. And it's slowly moving up, and you realize, oh, this is kind of like an escalator. Oh, and it's kind of going towards the light. And you and Joe realize about the same time, oh, Joe died, and he's going into the light. And he freaks out, and he's like, I'm not ready to die. Not on the day that I finally got my shot. And he starts running away from the light, and he starts trying to escape. And eventually he ends up falling off of the escalator to death and falls into the Great Before. And in the Great Before, he is trying to find some way to get back to Earth. And he sees that there's this mentorship program, and he's like, okay, that I might be able to figure something out. And he goes to the mentorship program, and he gets placed with a soul 22. And 22 has been around pretty much forever, because the rest of the souls that are getting placed are in like the millions or billions. Their numbers are crazy, but 22 has been around forever. And 22 has yet to be sent to Earth, because 22 has not found her spark. Just every single mentor you can possibly imagine, the best of the best of the best of the best, have all mentored 22, and 22 has found no inspiration or sight of joy in life on Earth. So Joe clearly has found something that brings him joy and wants to get back to Earth. 22 thinks it's super overrated and just wants to stay in the Great Before forever. And they realize, oh, we are on the same page. You don't want to go to Earth. I want to go to Earth. I can get your Earth patch when you find your spark, and then I can go to Earth and you can stay here forever. And they're both like, dream come true. This is perfect. But it proves to be more difficult than they expect, because 22 has seen pretty much everything Earth has to offer and is not interested at all. And they keep trying different things. They keep trying different things, but eventually they run out of time. And the mentorship program timeline has ended, and they say, all right, well, nice try. They don't say Joe, because he's impersonating somebody else. But they say, nice try.
Jorgensen.
Jorgensen, yeah. Nice try. Nobody's ever done it before. We didn't really think you were going to be able to do it either. So whatever. We'll just keep 22 around. We'll try with the next person. So 22 and Joe are not done, because they both are like, this is too perfect of a fit. We both can get what we want. And they take off. And 22 shows Joe something very interesting. Goes into, finds a way through her little cave. That's not a box. It's just a box. And gets into what is called the zone. And you can see there's these people floating around doing all sorts of different things that are their passions, the things that they love the most. And they're getting totally zoned in. And it's a moment where when somebody is just in their element, they go to the zone. And this is that zone. They find themselves in contact with an astral traveler named Moonwind and his crew of hippies. And they say, we can get you to your body. We just got to go to a weak spot. And they find a spot, draw a nice big circle, and they play their weird chanting music. And we see Joe's body is lying in a hospital, which is funny. I don't know who would have seen him fall into the manhole to take him to the hospital, but he's in the hospital. And 22 and Joe are both like, there it is. And Joe's like trying to jump in a little bit too early. And he accidentally falls in with 22, and they both fall in the wrong bodies, because Joe falls into a cat that was lying on his lap, and 22 lands in Joe's body. 22 is like, this is the last thing in the world I wanted. I didn't want to be on Earth. This is awful. Get me back to where I'm supposed to be. And Joe is like, I'm in a cat. I'm supposed to be in me so I can go play piano. And they're both freaking out. But what they did learn is that Moonwind, actually his physical body is in New York. Not that far away. They kind of discussed that in the zone. And so they're like, all right, if we can get to Moonwind, he can help switch us back. So they set off to go find Moonwind. And in the process of it, 22 gets to experience life. It gets to experience walking and hunger and eating pizza and the air and tasting candy and seeing world and living life. And she's starting to realize, like, wow, Earth is actually kind of cool. There's a lot of really great things going on here. Unfortunately for Joe, while he and 22 are wandering around New York in a hospital gown and a cat, Dorothea sees him in the streets while they're trying to get in a taxi. And she's like, oh, this teacher is crazy and I don't want him on stage with me. We'll circle back around to that. But they find Moonwind. And Moonwind is like, yeah, I can switch you guys back, but I got to do it at 6:30 p.m. for some spiritual reason. And so 22 and Joe go back to Joe's apartment. While they're there, Curly calls him and tells him Dorothea cut him. But they hatch a plan where, like, you know what? If I can just clean myself up, show up, look like a million bucks, I think I can convince her to let me play this show. So Joe and 22 get all dressed up, try to do a haircut, goes horribly wrong. So they go to Dez to get a new haircut. While Joe's getting his new haircut, 22 is communicating with Dez and talking about life and purpose, and learns that Dez, who is like, seems like his purpose is to cut hair. That's just what he ended up doing. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. But he actually wanted to be a vet. It was never his plan. His life changed trajectory when he was young and life was hard and needed to make money to pay the bills, and he found a way to do it, but it turns out that he ended up loving it. And that kind of starts a spark in 22 and Joe of learning, like, wow, that's weird. He seems like he's living out his purpose, but it wasn't something that he had other things that he thought were his purpose that could have been things that he loved just as much as cutting hair. So, I jumped too far ahead. After getting a haircut, Joe and 22 go to his mom to try to fix up his suit because they split the pants. And she gives him a hard time about going after more gigging instead of taking the full-time safe job. And he tells her about how it's his passion and how he loves it. It's all he wants to do. And that he just feels like she just doesn't care and doesn't support him. And it kind of switches a flip. And she realizes she's been trying to save him from this really hard lifestyle of being a musician that she watched her husband go through and that she kind of financially carried their family through by running this shop. But she sees this passion in Joe and she says, I'm proud of you. I'm going to support you. And she gives him his dad's old suit and tailors it to fit him perfectly. And he heads out. And as Joe and 22 are leaving the shop, talking about their feelings of Joe talking about his feeling of like feeling loved and appreciated by his family, he said, that felt like jazz. Like that felt like the thing that I've always said is my purpose and what makes me so happy. Moving on. Joe and 22 get to the location of the gig, and 22 is kind of talking about how she still hasn't found her spark. But she feels like closer than she's ever been. Like there's so many things that are interesting to me that make me excited. And I've never felt that way about anything on earth. And I've just got to find my spark. And then Moonwind arrives and she takes off. She's like, I'm not switching bodies. Not when I'm this close, I'm going to find my spark. And Joe chases after her. While they're doing this, Terry catches up to them. I knew I was going to, when I was going to forget to mention Terry, because Terry doesn't really matter. Going way back to when Joe first jumps off the assembly line, there's a eternal being. There's a few eternal beings. Terry is the one who counts all of the souls that come in and go out of the world. And he keeps track and makes sure that everything is right. Like this many people have died and this many people have gone into the great beyond, into that elevator light. And he realizes the count is off and he freaks out. And he goes to Jerry's, which are like these eternal godlike beings. And he tells them that the count's off and they're like, doubt it. Doesn't seem likely. And he's like, I'm going to fix it. And they're like, you do you, Terry, whatever you want. So he's off trying to figure out what happened. He realizes that it was Joe who was missing and he's chasing after them and he's trying to bring them back. And that's the like tension. There's not really a ton of tension. He just kind of is trying to get them back to where they're supposed to be. So while Joe is chasing after 22 and he's trying to get her to go so they can switch bodies, that Terry catches them and sends them back to the great before, where 22 and Joe and Terry and the Jerrys are all talking and they realize 22 has her Earth patch. Somewhere along the way, she found her spark. And Joe is still really focused on trying to get this gig. And he is like, you never found your spark. You never found your purpose. You just thought that you did because you were in my body. You just, music was your thing because you happened to be in my body. And I need that Earth patch to get to Earth so I can go play that show. And 22's kind of changed her mind about Earth because she's seen all the amazing things. She's like, I think life is actually worth living. I want to go down and be on Earth. And Joe is like, well, that's ridiculous. You don't have a purpose. You don't have a reason to go to Earth. And this cuts 22 deep, throws her Earth patch at him and runs off. And he kind of regrettably, not really regrettably, takes it, goes back to Earth, gets back in his body, goes to Dorothea Williams, gets the show, plays the show. It's super fun. He's in the zone. It's everything that's super fun. He walks out and he's like, I kind of feel empty. Like, I don't feel like it's what I wanted. And she tells him, quote, and she says, one fish says to another, I want to live in the ocean. The other fish says, ocean, that's where you are now. Then the first fish says, no, this is water. I want to be in the ocean. And she leaves. Kind of starts this like trickling in Joe's mind where he's like, I got everything I ever wanted and it's not everything I ever wanted. Like, I still feel like I don't have what I wanted. I don't feel like I'm fulfilled. Goes back home, pulls out all of the tokens and trinkets that 22 had been collecting throughout the day, a bagel, pizza crust, a lollipop, a helicopter seat, and is like, lays them all on the piano, is kind of playing. Remembering the day and all of the things that they experienced and went through, and he plays piano and gets into the zone, finds Moonwind and hops into the astral area and gets himself to the great before. Or no, he is with Moonwind and they find out that 22 has become like this obsessive mindless beast. I can't remember what they called him.
I can't remember either.
It's basically when somebody is way too obsessed about something to the point that they are just detached from their life. They are just a soulless being, living, doing nothing. And 22 has become that and is obsessed with the fact that she doesn't have a purpose, that she has no meaning to life. And Joe chases her all over the place, chases her into the great before and tracks her down and is inside of this like mindless beast thing and is realizing it's hearing all of the voices that are in 22's head of all of the different mentors that have told her that she will never amount to anything, that she has no purpose and meaning, that she can't be somebody of meaning or worth, with the last of which being Joe telling her how she has no meaning, she has no spark. The only reason she ever had anything was because of him. And he brings out the helicopter seed and takes it to her, and she remembers there is something worth living for, like life is worth living for. And it kind of brings her back to, and he's like, I've realized it. I think I skipped over a conversation earlier between Joe and a Jerry, but he basically comes to the realization that the spark is not your purpose. The spark is not your destiny. Jerry told him, like, thinking about the spark as like your purpose is like too simple. Like, the spark is just a box that's checked when you have realized that life on Earth is worth living and you're ready to live on Earth. And he's realized there is no, people aren't born with a destiny or purpose that they have to fulfill. Life is full of amazing, exciting opportunities that you should go out and seize. And he encourages 22 to take the Earth patch and go back to Earth, or go to Earth and live her life. And she's like, but your show, your gig. And he's like, I live my life. It's your turn to live yours. And he sends her off, and it's a wonderful, happy mentor moment. Then he finds himself on the elevator to the great beyond, the elevator to the death light. And a Jerry comes to him and says, we're in the business of inspiring souls. And we don't often find ourselves inspired, but you didn't only inspire 22, you inspired us. We want to give you another shot. We want to give you another chance at life. And he says, all right, I'll take it. And the Jerry asks him, so what do you think you'll do? How will you spend your life? And the movie ends with Joe responding, I don't know, but I do know I'm going to live every minute of it. And that's Soul.
Woo-woo, soul. That was good. Thanks, Josh. So Soul is a 2020 American comedy, drama, computer animated film. It was written by Pete Docter, the screenplay by him, Mike Jones, and Kim Powers. Stars voices such as Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, Questlove. I thought that was pretty cool. Felicia Rashad. Questlove is the drummer in the band.
Oh, Curly.
Yeah.
Nice.
And so a lot of cool actors in that. It was conceived. The idea was conceived in January of 2016, when Pete Docter was just kind of thinking about human personalities and just kind of throughout that the idea kind of sparked there. So it was originally set to release in it was either June or July. I looked, it's not up there, but it was set to release summer of 2020. But obviously we all kind of know what happened there as to why that didn't happen. And so it premiered at the London Film Festival in October of 2020, but was set and it was actually going to be released theatrically in November of 2020. But again, I think COVID spiked around that time again. And so it was just released on Disney Plus on Christmas Day of 2020. And so it was nominated for three Academy Awards, winning two of them. It won Best Animated Feature. And it won, what was the other one it won? I think it won something with music. The runtime is 101 minutes. The budget was $150 million. And at box office, which I don't even know how it has a box office. I guess it released some like in different countries that weren't as strict, but its box office is $121 million. So didn't make its money back there, but like we talked about last time, you have to put in the idea of how many subscriptions and different things on Disney Plus were driven to that because of movies and movies like that. And so it's not really, equivalent, I guess. It has a Rotten Tomato score of 95% with an audience score of 88%. So that's Soul.
Very nice. Did you talk about the music?
I don't think I did, actually.
I was looking into it. It's actually really interesting. So it's not, it doesn't seem like it's there was really one person. It's a compilation.
Yeah.
Of 23 score pieces. And it was mostly by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. But there's also, there was a follow-up album that was like music from,
like
inspired by Soul, cool. By John Batiste. Yep. So, I mean, it was just interesting stuff with music.
For sure.
Done differently.
Yeah. Not just one guy writing scores and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
right. Anything else on that, Josh?
No.
Why don't we go see if this movie can make its mark?
You've got to earn your mark by doing something big for something bigger than yourself. Someday you'll all make your mark, and I can't wait to see it.
All right, Josh, what do you have for general attraction?
I have a 9 for general attraction because going into this movie, seeing trailers and concept art, I was like, this looks like it's going to be reminiscent of Inside Out. It's in that level of creativity and different like way of thinking about the world and life. And I am all for it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I gave it an 8 because the real world implications, and it kept getting delayed. And I was like, come on, man, I just really want to watch this movie. And so that built up a little bit of interest. But the concept was a bit odd to me from the trailers, and I just didn't really know what to expect. An 8 is still a pretty good score as far as general attraction goes, but it was just a little bit odd of an idea, which, I mean, even in even the movie is a bit odd, but in a good way, if that makes sense. So that drove down general attraction for me a little bit, but it was still something I was looking forward to.
Yeah, that's not, I think I remember those kinds of conversations that we would have back when we were working together, and we would talk about it whenever we'd see a new trailer or something for it.
I specifically remember having the conversation with you about, because we would always pick a movie to go watch for summer camp, right? Like, and we would build the theme, around it. And I remember thinking, I was like, dang, I wish that Soul and Onward would just switch, because building a summer camp theme based off of Onward would have been so much easier, like the fantasy, than building it on a music teacher. Like, and so it was definitely something that, we definitely talked through that. I remember that conversation. That's funny. All right, plot. What'd you give plot? I'm gonna let you go first on this one.
So I wrote, when I was just kind of like blah, 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 thinking about it, I wrote an 8, but then as I was like talking through it and talking about how each point is so important to like the next, and like they build on each other so much, and the way that the decisions are made, and the moments when people, when person, the small moments where you see the characters change a little bit, I bumped that up because I was like, I don't think there's a lot of Pixar movies that I like the way that it flows and grows as much as this one, because it was kind of like Finding Nemo, where I was like, I feel like there's every single point I have to hit, like I can't miss anything, otherwise I'm gonna have to go back at the end and mention the Terry and Jerry thing, or go back and mention the whatever. And so I bumped that up to a 10 because I was like, honestly, I don't know that I like any other plot progression as much as this one.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. I gave it an 8 for a lot of those same reasons. I think it flows really well, and it goes, and just kind of seeing Joe go through his story and figure out what he figures out is just kind of a cool story. And it's almost like Joe and 22 are like opposites but the same, and so seeing their stories intertwine, and it's almost like they cross paths a few times and like change opinions and change all of that. And so it's kind of just interesting to see that happen. And so I gave it an 8.
Nice. What do you give it for themes?
Themes. I gave themes a 10. I really, really like the themes from this movie. And I think this is this movie's shining star, in my opinion. And I think it's what hits the best. Living is what life is all about. Like, it's not about passions. Sure, have passions, have things that you care about, but don't let them consume you, because they could. From the scenes in the astral plane or whatever it's called, you see people who are in the zone, but they actually lose their soul because they spend so much time seeking that high and seeking that passion so fervently and so completely that they lose themselves. Living every aspect of living is what life is all about. And I just think that is honestly such a cool thing. And also you do see a little bit of the same theme from Up, is that like life is more about the journey than the destination. And so I thought that was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, I gave themes a 9 for about the same reason. And I detract a little bit from it, just a little bit, because I think this is, some people listening are going to go, we're the exact same personality type. Both of us are life's about the journey, not the destination type people. We have almost identical like personality types. And so there is a type of person that, and a lot of people are this way. They have like really specific dreams or really specific desires. And part of living life is trying to pursue and work towards that goal. That's not really either of us. Like, yeah. I don't really have like this is my like life dream. I have to do this. But I know a lot of people that are that way, that like, if they weren't pursuing or trying to work towards that goal, they would not find a lot of joy in life. And I think that that type of person is important. And I don't think this movie entirely says that, that life is not about destination, that there shouldn't be destinations because life's about the journey. But that, and so I think that like a lot of things are super important and necessary from anyone who is a more of a destination person than a journey person. Those are the people who get things done. Those are the people who make the technology and incredible things that we're doing. And so I think that while that is super important, and I don't think the movie fully pushes back against that, it was when Jerry said like the spark isn't, we don't assign purposes, like that's not what the spark is, that you can quickly go to them saying like, oh yeah, that's, we don't say that you have to have, like, purpose is everything, and immediately jump to life is all about the journey. But then you can, if you think about it, it's like, they're not saying that purpose is bad or that having goals and destinations is always the wrong thing. It's when that completely overcomes you and that you miss the small things in life and that you totally ignore the journey because you're so focused on the destination. So I mostly just take one point off of, because I think that there is a lot to be.
That's definitely valid.
Valid about and important about destinations that can be lost if you just completely focus on the very end of the movie, where he's like completely like no more destinations or dreams kind of thing.
Makes sense. Animation, what do you give animation?
I give it a 10. Can you give it anything less?
No, you truly can't.
They nail the beautiful, like,
it's amazing
abstract aspect. They nail the real world stuff, and the moments,
looks amazing.
The moments when they overlay those, where like Terry first goes into the real world, yeah, in the hospital, it's like I thought I was looking at a real life hospital room. Like, it was insane.
Yeah, it definitely looks amazing. I gave it a 10 as well. And so the real world looks incredible. The pre and post worlds have their appeal as well and look incredible. And so it's really just a beautiful, beautiful movie. From top to bottom, honestly.
Absolutely.
Voice acting. I give voice acting a 9. Everyone fits their character pretty well. And so having the cool voice acting team that I said earlier, was pretty good. I think that Jamie Foxx does a really good job as Joe. I did like the bit about 22 picking her voice to be the most annoying, and that being Tina Fey. I think that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And so that's why I gave it a 9.
I gave it an 8, pretty much the same reasons. Nothing's like super standout, like this person is absolutely perfect for this, but these people did a really, really good job with their spots. I really love the flip-flop of the voices, where like it's Tina Fey's voice in Joe's, yeah, body, and it's Joe's voice, just like where they play around with the voices on the characters because of that. And so they did a lot of fun with that, and I enjoyed it.
For sure. So this is definitely different than any other movie, obviously. And I think you already know, because you mentioned it to me and I was on the lookout for it. But John Ratzenberger quiz. He didn't voice anybody, I don't think. But
yeah. So I was like looking through it. My thought is, I don't think he is. I could look back into it and like.
I look, he doesn't voice anyone. I think they just put him as a visual.
The one voice that I was like, yeah, he's a visual Easter egg, a person in the subway. That's not something I found on my own. I didn't even see him this time around. It was at some point in the subway scene where I remembered like, oh, I should have been looking for him. But I knew he was there from stuff I looked at before. The one of the voices of 22 when she's going through the voices, I thought like the really deep one, I was like, that sounds like it could have been him just doing a different voice. But if it's, he's not credited, right, then he didn't do it. I'd actually be interested to know who those voices were that she had at that point. Yeah, I don't know it off the top of my head. The really deep ones sounded really familiar.
Interesting. All right. Soundtrack. What'd you give soundtrack?
I give it a 7. I mean, there's a lot of really beautiful moments, but nothing is super standout.
Yeah, I gave it an 8 for pretty much that same reason. The musical parts throughout definitely shine as far as like when he's playing piano and when the kid is playing the trombone is a pretty cool scene. But in a movie about music, I would expect it to stand out a bit more.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. Like Coco is all about music and the music shines like above the movie almost at times, but this one just doesn't do that for some reason. And it's not like it's bad music. Just like I said, in a movie about music, you would expect it to shine just a little bit more and it doesn't. And so, yeah, it's not bad by any means, but 8 and 7 is probably a decent score for the music in this one.
Yeah. So what do you have for characters?
Characters. I give characters an 8. I do love the journeys that the characters go on. Joe figuring out that life is more about living than just focusing on passions and realizing that there is joy in every single moment of his life, not just the jazz parts. The family parts can feel like jazz parts. The friendships parts can feel like jazz. And kind of what you mentioned, just like they're like living can feel like jazz. And I just love that he figures that out, that it's not just a singular mind, like go until you get your dreams, but just like live out your dream. When opportunities arise, jump at them, take them, but don't let your life be like that. And then 22 just kind of figuring out that life is worth living, and the fact that none of the other people could help her figure that out, but a band teacher who likes to play the piano is someone who made her figure out that life is worth living. So it wasn't the miraculous, big, huge, like Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Abraham Lincoln, all of those people who lived these fantastic lives. It wasn't any of them that helped her figure it out. It was Joe. It was somebody who had a fairly simple life. And that is what drove her to think that living was worth it, is because Joe's life was worth living. And he needed to figure that out. And she helped him figure that out. And so I just think that was kind of a cool path that they both go on. What about you?
Yeah, an 8 for a lot of the same reasons. The verb they say, like, yeah, that's like jazzing, like life. Yeah, you're pretty good at jazzing. It's kind of the same idea you're saying, like life, they realize it before they actually realize it, that like everything in life can be as wonderful as a passion. All of the little things are as enjoyable. I think it's interesting. I think you or I would potentially be like 22 in the great before, because she realized that life was worth living because it was life, not because none of the things, the specific like big goals, dreams were ever appealing to her, because the ideas weren't appealing to her. It's the actual living, the actual day to day. And like, for anyone out there who's Enneagram focused, like I think 22 is like a 9, like just kind of happy to go through life, take on the opinions and the dreams and desires of the people around them, but just isn't like, I have to have this one thing. Like I don't have this one, like, this is what I have to do. I just want to enjoy whatever I'm doing at that time. So I don't know about the rest. I think that all of the mentors and all the different people that got placed into our life were people that had big dreams and big goals and had really strong desires, but she ultimately was not, that wasn't what was most appealing to her. She had to actually just enjoy the small things in life.
Yeah, for sure. And that their characters were very good throughout. I think that was, that's definitely something that shines as well. All right, humor. What'd you get for humor?
I gave it an 8. There were a lot of moments that I found myself like laughing out loud, really enjoying it. I think there were probably 5 or 6 times that like I legitimately like laughed out loud watching this, like on my own, really, really found it very funny. What about you?
I also gave it an 8. There's definitely situational humor throughout. The New York Knicks joke was out of this world funny, man. It is just so funny. That team literally does the wrong thing at every turn, and then it showing up that 22 is the reason that they have been bad this whole time. Oh my gosh, that is, this, the layers on that joke is so funny to me. That's probably my favorite humor moment. But yeah, it's definitely funny throughout, and so pretty good humor in this one.
Not watching a lot of basketball, that joke, I could tell it was a good joke, but I just didn't get it.
Just the, I love messing up with this team, and then the guy misses the dunk, and then the announcer says, and the New York Knicks lose again. Like, it's just so funny. All right, Easter eggs. I gave it an 8. And here's why. There's a ton, but they're literally all in one screenshot. When they first show the Hall of Everything, they mean it. It is literally the Hall of Everything. There is so much stuff in there. Some of the things that I found were in there. The target from Brave is the target that the person's shooting at. There's a pizza plant in the back. There's literally the rock formation from Cars, like the iconic rock formation that you can see in Radiator Springs. The whale from Nemo is in the background. The Axiom you can see up in the space sky up there. The Luxo lamp of Lamp Stomp fame is talking to one of the souls back there. And so there's probably even more that I didn't write down, but there's just so much in that one scene in the Hall of Everything. What about you?
Well, I mean, I've been comparing every other movie to this one, so I think it would just be wrong if I didn't give it a 10, because the Hall of Everything is literally everything. But also I was looking at like not necessarily Pixar Easter eggs, but things that they hid, and there's a lot. Like I paused on the screen of all the name tags, and it was really funny to read. It was fun to read all of the different mentors that she's had. Like it's all anyone that you can possibly like imagine. Like it's on there. There's a bunch of different languages that I obviously don't know the names of them, but I'm sure that they were accurate to important people.
Yeah.
And so really those are the two main areas where I focused in on like kind of what was Pixar trying to bury and hide. But the I'm sure that there's other things that are like not obvious things that Pixar kind of does where it's like family related or cast related throughout the rest of the movie. But those are the main things. And I think that I don't think that there's another time. Thinking back on it now, I think that maybe Inside Out might rival it in some of its moments, but there's not a lot of other times where they have as many Pixar Easter eggs in a single movie.
For sure.
You gave it an 8?
Yeah, I gave it an 8.
Disrespectful.
And ending, Josh, what did you give the ending?
I gave the ending a 9. I really love it. The moment, I was thrown off because I remember the first time I watched it, I really hated the ending.
Yep.
And it was because, and I liked it more this time because I think I understood what the story was trying to do much better than I did the first time I watched it. I felt like it was whiplash. Like it was so fast that you're like, wait, he's literally always been, the whole movie has been talking about like sparks and purposes. And so the message you're trying to teach me is that there's shouldn't be, like that didn't make any sense. But then watching the movie, knowing that that's where it's going, I saw it happening.
Throughout.
And so the way that it culminates in that, and you at the second time watching through it, it really hit me like they built up to a realization in two different characters in such a really great way.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And a lot of that is why I gave it an 8. And just seeing, like, I like the ending. I like where it goes. I like that 22 goes to Earth. I like all of that. And the sacrifices that Joe made for 22 is good, but the steps it takes are a bit strange. And even if they are connected, the hoops that you have to jump through is sometimes definitely hit me in the first time watching it and was confused, but this time it still didn't answer my questions completely as far as the ending goes. And so that's why I gave an 8. It's a really good ending. There's just some things that knock it down.
Nice.
Great. Looks like you have been putting in our scores. And so Soul measures in at an 88 for Josh and an 85 for me. And that gives it a score of 86.5, Josh.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Dude, I don't know how I feel about this.
That's something else, because I know that's going to be fairly high on our list. It looks like it's coming in at 10. The second movie in a row that's coming in to 10th place.
Technically looking at it, it's actually tied for 9th. Oh no, tied for 8th.
Yeah.
With two, it's a three-way tie for 8th, which would mean that Onward and Cars also make our top 10, technically. Or our bottom 10. Our bottom three of the 10 have the same score. But it very couple interesting. It lands at 12 for you, tying with Cars 3 at 11. And it took 9th place in mine. So it is now in my top 10.
It's tied for 6th place in yours.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's tied for 6th place. It bumped in the spreadsheet at 9, but yeah. It's interesting by it bumping to where it is. It knocked Toy Story out of my top 10, which is wild to me.
That is wild. So, I mean, it's definitely a good movie, and honestly, the best part about this is that I really think Pixar is still hitting their stride, and it's still something that they're passionate about, they're excited about, and it gets me excited for the movies that are to come. And so Soul, just coming out last year, or I guess it's 2 years ago now at this point, but 2 calendar years, it's just exciting to see what's next. And so we're nearing the end, but Pixar's still putting out top 10 movies, in our opinion, and that's just a really, really cool thing. And so, yeah, Soul. 86.5. That's pretty cool, man. All right, why don't we go on to Woody's Roundup? Woody's Roundup. All right, Josh, who is your favorite character from Soul?
It's hard with the parameters we've created, trying not to just talk about the main characters, but in movies that aren't like Toy Story or Cars, where there's not really a lot of other characters, it's pretty hard. A lot of other characters kind of support the two main characters in different ways, and they help them along on their journey. And I think the character that I like what they do for the journey the most is Dez. Kind of seems like the starting moment. I really love his, I like his story more than most. He really changes like their perspective more than I think most. He really starts them on a trajectory of like realizing like you can find joy in anything that you have going on.
Yeah, for sure. Dez, he found peace in life by enjoying what he's doing currently, presently, finding purpose in what he's doing and finding that life is enjoyable if you just are, and just connecting with people the way that he does, is probably something that's really cool for him. And so it's honestly a little inspiring to just know that, like, yeah, you would think that, like, no offense to barbers, but it's not like the most glamorous job in the whole entire world, but to find peace and to find purpose in that and to know that you're making a difference, because he literally does make a difference in this story and probably to people every single day. And that's just a really cool thing.
Yeah.
Least favorite.
It was kind of hard. I don't have any like issues with any of the characters. They all are fun. And this kind of feels like when we were doing I think it was Toy Story, where like I was like, I don't want to pick one of the fun people to be my least favorite. But I mean, I guess my least favorite is Moonwind. Not for any like great reason. I mean, but if I have to pick somebody who helps them along on their journey that I don't care the most, I care the least about, it's Moonwind.
Yeah, for sure. I picked the mom. She's very discouraging, but like you said, she's a believable character because you can understand why. It sounds like the dad followed that passion maybe a little bit too far at times. And so understanding that that's where she comes from even makes her a relatable character. And it's not like she's bad. It's just, yeah, like you said, there's times when Woody's roundup is the hardest one to do because the characters are also good, or they're also just kind of flat beyond the main characters, that it's hard to do. And so, but I think it's a good exercise, and I think we keep doing it.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we go into 22?
It is an honor having you prepare 22 for Earth.
I'm going to make you wish you never died.
Zach.
Yes.
Did you have any dreams growing up? Do you have any dreams right now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Because I don't even know. And I know that's kind of a weird answer and it's a weird statement, but it's not something that I focused on, I guess. I probably did have dreams. I had things that I was striving towards. Like right now I'm getting my master's to be able to teach. That's something I'm striving for right now. But I don't even know that it would be like something that I would call a dream. It's just something I'm doing. And so I don't know if my mind works in that way. What about
when you were a little kid, did you ever like have like a wild, big, crazy dream? I had one, and it wasn't really like from when I was super young, but I knew I was never going to achieve it.
Well, why don't you tell yours and I'll think through it, because I don't know.
I don't remember how long ago this was, and it's going to make me probably sad to realize it. But I remember when Bruno Mars was playing the Super Bowl halftime show.
Okay.
Do you know when that was? While I talk,
a while please, back, please, but not so long up. Ago.
While I talk, look it up. Just tell me what year it was, please. Okay. So I remember I was at a friend's house and I was watching the Super Bowl, and Bruno Mars was playing the Super Bowl halftime show, and he has this moment in his halftime show where he has a big drum solo.
Oh yeah.
And it leads into this fun song, and it's awesome. And I'm a drummer, so I loved it. And my like, I was in high school at this point, like kind of early high school, and I just was like, I'm going to say my life goal is to play the drums in the Super Bowl. Never in my life did I ever be like, I'm going to achieve that. But I was like, if anybody ever asked me, what's your life goal? I'm like, that would.
I lost you.
It's like, we're never going to play the Super Bowl. That was never our goal. That was never my expectation. But that was always something that I talked about. Like, oh yeah, I want to play drums in the Super Bowl.
So it was in 2014.
Oh my goodness. I knew it was going to make me sad. Cause even the other day I realized when Coldplay played in the Super Bowl, like the big 50s, I was like, that was 4 years ago. Are you kidding me? 5 years ago, whatever it was. It was longer than that. It was so, and I knew this was a while before that. So,
yeah. All right. What are some things that you think would make up your Earth ticket?
Oh, okay. What are some, remind me of what some of the things that went on some of theirs.
So yeah, this is kind of a loaded question. I think it was personality types was where she was sending them to all of the like halls or the like almost the things like you have in your background, the little stations. And then obviously the spark was more like what you would find that almost would be your purpose, but like, I guess just what are some things that make up you?
Stubborn and ironically easygoing. I'm so easygoing until like the 1% of the time where it's something that this is what I want, in which case I do not bend, period. And it's a problem, and I know it is, but it comes out sometimes, and it's really funny, especially when I see my daughter, the stubbornness. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And definitely anywhere and everywhere I've ever been, like the awards or things that people attribute to me always involve energy. And so probably like a picture of like a battery, like something just like, I remember in like high school on my soccer team, everybody got like awards and it was like your like thing. And I was awarded the Energizer Bunny. Like, I just don't stop. I just keep going. And so that probably something along the lines of like hard-headed, while also a lot of the times kind of just going with the flow and being way too energetic all the time. What about you?
I think that's honestly, you hit it. what would mine be? I think easygoing, just kind of go with the flow, kind of like what you were saying. I probably have some stubbornness in there as well too, but it doesn't rear its head as much, I don't think. A picky eater would probably be somewhere on there, because I'm not terrible, but if I get in my mind that I'm not going to eat something, I'm not going to eat it. And that happened as a child, and it's still to this day something that Carly struggles with.
What's one thing? Just name one thing real quick.
Food?
One food thing that you're like, I won't eat it.
Oh, meatloaf. I'll never eat meatloaf in the rest of the history.
So it's not like an ingredient. It's a dish. Do you have like ingredients or no?
Not really.
I have one ingredient. I hate pickles. Mm-mm. Oh, that's fair. Pickles are weird. I don't like them, but I'll eat them. I have one thing that I won't eat. And it's not like just one ingredient. It's one ingredient from one place. And it's sour cream from Taco Bell. I refuse. I hate it with a burning passion. I'll eat it anywhere else. I'll mix it in with stuff. The way that Taco Bell does their sour cream guarantees that you're going to eat a bite full of tortilla and sour cream every time. And it's disgusting.
Yeah. They definitely don't spread it out. They literally put one ingredient here and one ingredient here. And then you can never have.
Yeah, and have you ever seen how they put it on?
It's like
one time. It's like a caulk gun, dude. It looks like it's a construction site. It's so gross. I can't stand it. I'll eat anything else. Like, it doesn't matter. I will eat anything else. But if I go to Taco Bell, I sound like a picky eater. I'm like, can I get this and this and this? Oh, no sour cream on anything. Don't you dare put that caulk sour cream on mine.
All right. What's your second thing, Josh?
Oh, regather myself. I'm up on my stubbornness. Hold on. I think we already know the answer too. We've kind of already hit on it several different times. So it was, could you live your life without ever pursuing a dream or like a big goal? Like you said, you're working on your master's degree. Like if you didn't have like a thing that you were working towards, do you think you'd be fine?
I don't even think that's possible. And it might be, but like having things to strive for is what life's all about. Like you're striving for what's next. Mm-hmm. And so maybe people can live in the now and just be content and never growing, but I just don't see how that's possible. I don't want, like this movie portrays, I don't want those things to consume me, but I don't think it's possible really for me to just stay as I am. I do want to grow, and I do want to pursue what's next, no matter what it is.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I live with a bunch of destinations, but I try to enjoy the journey along the way and not focus too much on the destination. But I definitely am I'm a goal. It's changed a lot because Hunter is a big time goal achiever. And so I've become a little bit more like her over the past few years, where like I do, like I'm looking at, I'm going to graduate in May, and I know exactly how I'm going to work towards it. I'm going to start as soon as I finish the first thing. So as soon as I check one box, I've got my next box lined up.
Yeah. So that definitely makes sense. So I think finding the balance between having dreams, having goals, and not letting that consume you is where life happens, I think, is kind of almost even what the movie is portraying.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right, I have a quick question and then a conversation that I don't even necessarily want to dive super hard into, but just because I don't even know if there's a point. But so my question is, in the Soul universe, do you not die until you go into the great beyond? So like Joe is on the escalator thing, but he's in a hospital.
His body's like in a coma.
Not dead, or they wouldn't have him in a hospital bed.
Yeah, his body's like, I think, in a coma.
Yeah. And so coma until you reach the great beyond, is that kind of what you see?
Yeah, I think so.
And in theory, it should only be a few seconds.
Right. You should probably pretty quickly roll right up with the rest of the crew and just zip, 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 like everybody else, just zap into the little bug killing light.
Right.
I think that makes sense. It's an interesting concept. Not really something I've ever really thought about. I've kind of always thought of it as like an instant thing, but yeah.
And then the conversation that I don't even really know if I want to have, but I'm going to just present it, is a conversation about 22 and just the internet is full of people who are theorizing who 22 is born to be. Do you feel like there is anyone in the Pixar universe that 22 is connected to as far as who she becomes? Or do you think that it's just that we takes away from some of this movie?
Two facts. We can't not talk about them when we talk about Pixar and the Pixar. And I usually bring up the Pixar theory.
Yeah.
The count's off only one other time. Who's 22? I think in the things that I've kind of heard is that 22 is Boo, and she's the one who messes up the count at one point when she starts messing around with time. And sure, I buy it, whatever.
I've seen different things. I've seen people think that she's potentially Riley. I don't really know what's behind that. I don't buy into that.
Yeah, I don't buy that either.
I've seen the Boo thing, which kind of makes sense, I guess. But I also saw one that I think could be somewhat legit, and I don't really know, but it's even about a movie we haven't seen yet, is that if you look at the Earth, where she's going is somewhere in like Asia, and potentially even more specifically where red pandas are from.
So Turning Red, the character from Turning Red,
be connected to Turning Red.
We'll revisit that idea when we do Turning Red then. Because sure. We'll be on the lookout.
Yeah. My personal opinion is that she's just somebody. And that's okay.
She's just a person. She goes and lives life.
And yeah. And I think that actually, like, if we find out somehow, some way, someday, that she is someone else from Pixar, I think that takes away from this story. Because, yeah. Like, that proves to me that life's only worth living if I'm Boo. you know what I mean? Like, but if she's just somebody, then I think that makes it better.
No one's special, but special because it's life. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I say Boo for the fun of the Pixar theory, but I don't really care.
Same, honestly. All right, why don't we move on to our core memories?
But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories.
All right, Josh, what is your core memory for Soul?
There's a lot of fun moments throughout, but I think like my favorite moment has got to be like the end when Joe really realizes what's going on, and it's the culmination of all of the steps of the journey together. The calm music that is playing with him talking really kindly, softly, being a good mentor to 22, and they both jump off to Earth, and he's like, I'll go as far as I can. Like, that moment's like the sweetest, best moment in the movie to me.
Yeah, I think that's really good. There's definitely moments throughout the movie that I thought were good. I don't even really have an explanation, but it struck me last night, and I don't even really know why. But I'm going to say, and this is so strange for me for some reason, but I'm going to say the subway scene where the guy's just playing music, and he is just living his best life, and he's just... It may seem like we've probably seen those kind of people before, but to have that be a pivotal moment for 22, realizing that he's just there, just enjoying life, just doing his thing. And for Joe to connect with that as well. He's not playing on stage with Dorothea Williams, but he's just playing music because he loves playing music and is doing it for people. And that's just a really cool scene and really cool moment for me.
I like that. Zach, you know what didn't happen yesterday?
What didn't happen yesterday?
Or whatever day it was. I don't remember you texting me and telling me that you cried during this movie.
I didn't cry during
Soul. Ah, that's odd.
It is. I agree.
Got to be a top 10 movie to cry for.
Yeah, I honestly would have thought that that would have been a thing, but no, I didn't.
Well, it was just interesting. I realized it. I was like, you know what? I never did get that text.
Yeah, I know. It wasn't a thing, which is, now that you're saying it, it's kind of odd.
And that's Soul. That's a great movie, man.
That is Soul for sure. And so, yeah, that's Soul. So that has been that movie. We only have one current movie that's left that's out, but we're nearing closer. We're like, just actually, I think yesterday was a month from Turning Red. So we're actually closer to Turning Red than I have previously thought. So
I kind of come out almost like in schedule with what we're doing right now.
It actually will, because we've been behind on a few things, and we apologize that we can't be like super duper consistent, and honestly, like, y'all should understand that life happens and we just get busy, and we're both getting our degrees and life and jobs and husbandness and dadness, and so yeah, but we're still super committed to doing this and going beyond Pixar, and so we're still super excited about it. So get excited. All right, man, what is next?
We've got Luca coming up.
Luca, which is just this week got announced that it was nominated for Best Animated Picture for 2021. I don't like its chances. Not because it's a bad movie, but just because I think that it's just not one that would win, I don't think. It's going against like Encanto and Raya and the Last Dragon and just other movies that I think might be a little bit better as far as the Academy Awards go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So, but I'm excited for Luca. I'm excited for to talk through that movie, rewatch it again. I remember my impressions from the first time watching it. And so I'm excited to see how that's changed in a short amount of time. And so, yeah, Luca is next. All right, Josh, I think that's it for Soul. So the people can contact us in all the ways that they can contact us. And so if you want to give your opinion and jump in the conversation, just let us know. And so, for Zach and Josh, this has been Lamp Stomp. Peace.
Peace.